Many people believe in the healing power of food, and after all, it is necessary to sustain life. And thus, the ability to swallow is a critical life-giving reflex. But there are those circumstances where that reflex is hampered or interfered with, and food can even become a danger. Well, joining us this morning to help us understand how and when this can happen and what can be done about it are Jenna Gardner and Kim Brown, both speech-language pathologists with Upstate University Hospital. Welcome to you both. Thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's begin by understanding, like, when can a swallowing difficulty develop, Kim?
At a lot of different stages in life. You certainly can have developmental swallowing problems, depending on what kind of developmental disorders you may have, CP, any kind of Down syndrome. A lot of children like that may have swallowing problems. And then neurological problems that can develop later in life if you had stroke, Parkinson's, ALS, those kinds of things can cause swallowing problems.
Mm-hmm. Head and neck cancer patients, you know, even going back to pediatrics, children born with cleft palates or have craniofacial anomalies as well.
And sometimes, did you mention stroke? Yes, stroke, for example,
stroke.
So there's a lot of things that can interfere with that natural reflex, whether it be that they're born with it developmentally or they acquire it later in life. So that's a crucial thing in terms of the fact that food, as I mentioned, is so crucial for life. So in your job, what is it that you guys do to help people with their swallowing difficulties? In other words, you are in your role. Do you help the person themselves? Do you actually provide therapy for the individual person, or do you also work with their families?
My role here at the hospital is more at the acute level, so immediately post-stroke. I do a lot of the evaluations in-house to determine if the patient is able to eat safely, and then they kind of head towards Kim's direction at the rehab level, but it's usually a multi-step process where it starts at the acute level, transitions to possibly a rehab, and then on to home as well. So there's managing it at a lot of different levels.
So you do provide, Kim, then you do provide help directly to the patient in terms of rehabilitation, but you also work with their families. I would think that would be very crucial as well.
We have on the rehab unit, once we get the patient down from Jenna, on the rehab unit, we do a feeding and swallowing group, actually, one in the morning at breakfast time and one in the afternoon, where we're working on different strategies. We're looking at consistencies of food. Cognition plays a big part in eating, and are you paying attention to what you're doing? And we also have a brain injury education group, and within that, we talk about swallowing problems, because the majority of the patients that we get on inpatient rehab have acquired that swallowing problem from a neurological difficulty.
Some kind of insult to their...
Correct. TBI or stroke.
TBI meaning?
Traumatic brain injury.
Brain injury. So you might even... Do you ever see people who have been... who are veterans, or is that mostly at the VA?
It's mostly at the VA, but we do get veterans. Sometimes their injury may be more complicated, and we take that type of patient at Upstate. So yes, we do get veterans.
So basically your job is to evaluate the safety of their eating and then to provide them with strategies and an understanding of how best they can swallow, achieve this very crucial reflex. What are generally the long-term consequences? I mean, it seems evident that obviously malnutrition would be one, but what are there other long-term consequences of having difficulty with
yes, it can really affect the lungs if a patient is aspirating and they keep getting recurrent pneumonias from aspiration.
Aspiration meaning what?
That is when food or liquid goes into the lungs instead of down into the esophagus.
So it's a mistake. In other words, it goes down the wrong pipe?
The wrong way,
And that can lead to bacteria forming and as you said, a consequence of that could even be pneumonia.
And at the acute level, when these patients are a lot more medically fragile, that can lead to intubation again.
So they have to have a breathing tube
put back in. So I do a lot of family education at that level, too. You know, most people say they want ice chips, they're thirsty, they'd like a drink. So we do have to educate a lot on why that's so detrimental to them.
And then it seems to me when you talk about acute level, also something like choking, yep, it would yes. seem to be very yes. obvious
yep.
yeah.
that yep. could be a real issue if there's a reflex problem there. Yep. So, so it seems to me that overall, all of these issues create a lot of pain and suffering potentially for the patient. In your experience, the kind of work that you're doing, do you see improvement, or what kinds of improvement are you able to affect?
We see all kinds of improvement, and I think for Jenna and I, it may be a little bit different than what the patient and the family want, but the improvements that we kind of see is going from I can't eat anything to maybe I can tolerate some pudding-type consistencies or some thickened liquids. Sometimes it may be we're eating just because it's pleasurable. And then sometimes, a lot of times, we get people back to being able to eat their regular consistencies.
Let's talk about that just in a little bit of time we have before we have to take a break. About consistencies of food, that sounds like that's an important criteria in terms of beating this problem, so to speak.
Yes.
So give us some examples of what different kind of consistencies of foods are, because I don't think people really think about that very much.
Oftentimes we start with a pureed kind of consistency, which is just as it sounds, where the food is blenderized. And it makes it a little bit easier to get down. We use different types of liquids, so sometimes we thicken up the liquid. That also will help getting the food down and going down the right pipe, so to speak.
And thickening liquids slows down how quickly it moves, so it gives the patient a little more time to coordinate a swallow. It's very precise movement, so yeah. thickening it gives them more time to coordinate that.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, because I do want to talk more about that, and I think we can talk about it in the context of some of the tips and things that you have to offer us. But we'll be right back. We need to take a really short break. Welcome back to HealthLink On Air. Linda Cohen, along with Jenna Gardner and Kim Brown, a speech pathologist here at Upstate Medical University, and we're talking about how to feed someone with a swallowing difficulty. And before the break, we were talking about issues of food consistency. You know, some things, obviously, and you made the point, I think, before, Jenna, that if you thicken a liquid, it actually goes down slower, but it's not a problem to swallow. It's less of a problem to swallow. It actually enhances the ability to swallow. Is that correct?
It just makes it a little safer. There's a very fine mechanics of a swallow, and if you're having muscle weakness from some sort of a brain injury or, a variety of reasons, any swallowing problem, it gives a little more time for those muscles to coordinate a swallow to keep your airway protected.
So it sounds to me like, and Kim, you can comment on this too, that there's almost a progression of, I want to get to specific tips that you'll mm-hmm. offer, but that there's almost progression in the consistency of food that you might want to introduce to someone who has a swallowing difficulty. Can you help us understand what that might be?
Yeah, there usually is a progression, and I think as speech pathologists, we start with something, as Jenna was saying, that's a little bit easier to swallow, that gives the body a little bit of help with the timing, because it really is something that happens very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So if we start with a pureed type of consistency and thickened liquid, so we thicken it to sometimes the consistency of honey, sometimes the consistency of a nectar,
mm-hmm.
So and we start
juice.
There. Yeah.
It's like the consistency of tomato juice.
So when you say thicken, do you actually thicken it to do it? And
yep,
what do you use? I'm curious.
There's a powder thickener or a gel thickener. We use mm-hmm. powder usually.
And you can control that?
Yes.
As to how much.
Yep.
And would you send, in terms of your treatment of people, would you send a family home knowing how to do this?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and,
part of it.
You know, thickener can be bought at pretty much any pharmacy.
Yep.
It's there. So it's something that they get educated on before they go home if their patient is being sent home on a modified diet.
So after they use something like a thickened liquid, what's the next stage, in other words?
Well, they would be followed if they're working on improving and advancing back to regular liquids and maybe a more normal food consistency. or regular food consistency, they would be working with a speech pathologist to in therapy to progress there.
But nobody the point is they would go from this thickened liquid to a liquid to then maybe something like a pureed food?
Usually we'll start them, the most conservative diet you can be on is pureed foods with honey thick liquid.
That's the most conservative, meaning the easiest to swallow. And where does it go from there?
So from puree you would go to maybe a finely ground food consistency. So if you think like taco meat, finely ground foods. And then from there, it's more soft salads. So chopped up chicken with gravy, very moist salads, avoiding a lot of really dry, crunchy, chewy, sticky foods. And then from there, it kind of progresses to regular. So that's the progression of food that we would hope to see. In liquids, again, if we're starting at the most conservative with honey, it goes from honey thick down to nectar, which is, again, like tomato juice, if you want to picture the thickness, and then to thin liquids.
Okay. Well, you were saying before, and I know before, that you had some very specific tips for people. I mean, what are the kinds of things that you counsel people, or how do you help people move forward into with this problem?
I think one of the things that people don't realize, because in our society food is so important, people don't realize how dangerous it can be. So they see food as a time to gather and to talk and
to socialize.
Exactly. And that can be very dangerous for somebody who has a swallowing problem, because cognition is part of the difficulty. It's not just physically I have this problem, but cognitively I may not be able to pay attention to what I'm doing. So turning the television off, avoiding some side conversations, making sure that you're focused on swallowing, and maybe some of the tips that the speech pathologist has taught you. Sometimes we use strategies like tucking your chin down that can help protect the airway and sort of force the food to go in the proper direction.
So another point I thought of also is that maybe you wouldn't have your social gatherings around meals.
Yes.
I mean, in that kind of situation, that might be one alternative strategy.
Correct.
But getting back very, very quickly, what exactly do you do to help people swallow better? What are the kinds of things you do?
There's a lot of different strategies we use. Some of them are the positioning kinds of things, like tucking your chin down. Sometimes we actually do some stimulation with ice, so we can kind of help get those muscles moving a little bit. There's electrical stimulation that's out there that also can help kind of rejuvenate some of these muscles and help that going along. So it depends an awful lot on the cause of the problem,
of course,
exactly what we're doing.
But you're saying there are strategies that really can help improve in terms of the physical mechanics as well as the cognitive awareness can be trained.
Correct.
So that cognitive piece is one thing that might really impact someone's safety with swallowing. But say you've got another patient who maybe has a paralyzed vocal cord, so they're not able to really get good protection of their airway. So a simple head turn or positioning, it may help them. So strategies, again, it depends on what's causing the swallowing problem. But
by enumerating these as you have, I think it helps people understand that there are very specific mechanical things as well as cognitive things that you can be doing to actually help.
And I think one strategy that is pretty much important for all patients with a swallowing difficulty is positioning.
Yeah.
So sitting up in a chair 90 degrees as much as you can. We want gravity working in our favor. And if you're in a reclined position, that just shoots everything to the back
a little bit faster. It makes it much more complicated.
Yep. Imagine trying to eat your meal so semi-reclined.
Or lying down.
Yes. And oftentimes that's one of the things that I think Jenna and I have to educate staff and family about.
How about things like chewing more slowly and being very deliberate with each bite? I mean, is that something that's important?
Yep, controlling your bite size or your sip size is often something we talk a lot about too. Small bites, making sure it's chewed thoroughly and it's cleared out of the mouth and swallowed before you put another bite in.
Does it matter if you serve maybe one type of food at a time? Is that an important consideration too?
Depending on the person and what the what's causing the swallowing problem, it can. I work a lot with patients who have ALS. It's Lou Gehrig's disease, more commonly known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and it's a progressive disease. So we talk a lot about the fatigue throughout a meal. So maybe serving one more chewable food item and the sides or the other things being soft and easy to chew or non-chewable so they don't fatigue too much. So
pacing is very important.
Yep.
Or doing it more frequently throughout the day.
Yep, small.
So eating small meals frequently throughout the day as a way of getting your nutrition.
Yep. Cancer patients sometimes have difficulty with fatigue as well. We have a lot, and stroke patients.
Yep.
It can be very tiring to chew and swallow. So sometimes eating 6 or 8 meals a day versus sitting down and having three big meals is easier.
What about things like straws? Are those helpful or are they harmful?
I think we have different opinions about straws, and it also definitely depends. I was educated that straws are kind of, they can be scary because
they can be dangerous.
It's hard to control the amount of liquid when you're adding that extra pressure that gets to the back. However, and sometimes with Jenna's patients, they can be helpful.
Yep, and when hydration sometimes is an issue, again, I get these stroke patients who maybe have a significant weakness on one side of their face. So when they try to drink from a cup, they're losing a majority of their liquid out of their mouth. But if we can place a straw to one side, they can keep more of it in. And at the acute level, a lot of times hydration is a big issue. So sometimes we go the route of the straw if they're safe.
I think that's a key point, though. What I think you're saying, though, is it's very much, it has to be tailored or custom fit.
Correct.
The treatment has to be fit. But I think one of the things that comes out as I listen to you is the enormous amount of patience one must have with someone who is having swallowing difficulties, or with the patient themselves having to have patience with themselves, because it is something that we never think about. It's such an automatic reflex.
Right. It is.
And in this case, every step of it needs to be addressed, thought about. You get it from the automatic level to the cognitive level, where you have to really watch it, think about it, and almost rehearse it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Practice it.
Mm-hmm. And because some of these modifications, if you're doing a positioning, the head turn like Jenna talked about, or a chin tuck position, that doesn't always look that great when you're out at a restaurant. Or if you're having a meal with your family and you have to do these different types of strategies, or if you're on a modified diet, you need a little bit of patience. And you need patience to be able to just prepare the meal. So for the caregiver,
do you find that patients, that individual patients with these problems need a long-term intervention? In the little bit of time we have left, does it require long-term intervention, or is this something you can give them a series of tricks or strategies and send them off?
Some of both, but I would say more of a majority of long-term.
Yes.
And do you find that these approaches are effective, though?
Yes.
Yep. Yes,
and people can really get the nutrition they need and find a way of solving it.
Mm-hmm. And some people start out with a combination of a temporary feeding tube or a more permanent one that's placed in their stomach while we're transitioning them back to eating and drinking. And even though maybe we can get them eating and drinking a little bit, they can't get enough nutrition by mouth, so they're still relying on that feeding tube.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for coming in with all this really important information. There is a complete article on all of this in the winter edition of Upstate Health, which you can subscribe to for free just by calling 464-8668. Well, my guests have been Jenna Gardner and Kim Brown, speech-language pathologists with Upstate University Hospital. We have to take another short break, but we'll be right back with more HealthLink on air. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.